Welcome to Scare My Best Friend to Death, where we answer the only true horror question. Will my best friend survive this movie? Join our hosts, Crystal, an avid horror enthusiast since she was a small child, and Katie, who has to sleep with a light on after watching anything remotely scary, as they discuss the best horror movies Crystal can make Katie watch.
Hi, I'm Crystal.
And I'm Katie.
And welcome to Scare My Best Friend to Death, where this week we are covering the 2013 horror film Oculus. This is directed by Mike Flanagan, is starring Karen Gillan and Brenton Thwaites, and it is currently at the time of this recording streaming on Pluto. Of course, we have to talk about it. Spoiler warnings. We're going to talk about everything in this movie. You've had about 10 years to watch it. If it missed you, go watch it. Come back. Trigger warnings. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of gore. And there is domestic abuse in this movie. So if that's not your jam, we completely understand. And this is your chance to get out. So, Katie, compared to The Babadook, was this harder to watch or scarier? Or do you think, oh, I'll make it through The Babadook so I can make it through this?
You know, I thought that because I made it through The Babadook, I could make it through anything. But
the tip of the iceberg, ma'am.
I'm really starting to doubt that, especially with all of the twists and turns in Oculus, the way that you don't know if it's a flashback they're having or if whatever's going on is making them see themselves as children. This one messed with my mind.
I think that it was supposed to do that. I am just going to go out on a limb here and say that you've probably not watched anything else by Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, that name does not sound familiar.
And that's a shame. And we're going to change that. Mike Flanagan, I would equate him to probably this generation's John Carpenter and Stephen King kind of mixed together.
I'm more of a James Cameron and Steven Spielberg type of person.
Wrong Steven. So this was really like his breakout movie that he directed. He was 35 at the time that he directed this, but he has gone on to do several movies and several Netflix series. So he's got his own kind of Mike Flanagan universe, akin to like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He has done this. He's done Dr. Sleep, which is the sequel to The Shining.
Mm.
He has done one of the biggest like hits of his was the limited series he did for Netflix called The Haunting of Hill House. Now, that is a fabulous series, Katie, but I don't think you can handle that one. I had trouble handling certain episodes of that one. Most recently, he did for Netflix, The Fall of the House of Usher.
I actually heard of that.
Once again, build yourself up. he did Midnight Mass was another series of his. You may like that one, but you still need to be built up a little bit.
Probably. So,
now, one thing about Mike Flanagan is he's going to make sure his wife is in every single thing that he does. And we got to love a man that's got his wife in everything. It's like, oh, we're going to get you a payday too. His wife is Kate Siegel, and she is the one who plays Marisol in this movie. Marisol is the
demon out of the mirror.
Yes, that the when she appeared to the father, this was who he was kind of being seduced by and in love with. So that is who his wife has played. When we get in this movie, this movie has two different time frames going on. You have current events, and then you have what had happened 11 years prior. Miss Ma'am, we have a brother and a sister, and I'm just going to let you hit the road running on this part. This movie could not have been more about what a trauma bond is and the intricacies and depth of a trauma bond. Like, this brother and sister sibling are fucked up.
I mean, you can't even measure the amount of trauma that they have been through. And not just trauma from, like, I don't know, being choked by your mother. Or then, you know, being choked by your father, like, 20 minutes later. I mean, poor girl was going to have petechiae and bruises for months. When you're talking about trauma that is long-lasting and is deep-seated, these are those type of fears that when we look at them, they don't go away. Usually when there is extreme trauma related to a family member, there are triggers that last your whole lifetime. If you go through it with another family member and you both come out on the other side, the bond there is going to be stronger than a bestie bond or than a bond between romantic partners. Because you lived through something so tragic. You know, like your father chaining your mother to the wall and making her eat glass and, you know, bringing that haunted ass mirror in to begin with. Everything they went through, and it just, it, you, as you see it through the movie, it builds. It's a gradual escalation of what they're experiencing. So when you see like the first thing or the second, you're like, okay, a little bit of counseling and they'll be fine.
No, I don't think that go work for them.
By about 30 minutes into this movie, I'm like, oh, they're fucked up. They ain't no way out of this one.
Yeah.
I hope the fiance has amazing amount of credit, because the credit card bills he's going to have for her, for number one, her alcohol, number two, her getaways, number three, the therapy sessions, and number four, retail therapy. Because at this point, I mean, there, every kind of therapy is going to be needed to help, not just your regular, you know, cognitive therapy or behavioral therapy. Oh no, we're talking the whole spectrum.
Like, the whole nine yards.
Yes. Out of all of the psychology classes I took, there was one class that covered all seven major types of therapy, or I guess you could say like categories of therapy. They gonna need to use that whole damn textbook.
Probably. The events originally take place 11 years prior to what is actually going on, you know, in the present. Do you think that her being an antique dealer working for an auction house, you know, obviously she's got a vendetta against the mirror, of course, but do you think that that would be an interesting job, or do you think you're going to have constant hauntings? Like, do you think you're going to pin one antique against the other and be like, y'all just go at it and we'll see who wins?
You know, I mean, between this movie and I don't know how many times I've watched every episode of Charmed, you just don't work with antiques. That's the lesson here.
No.
You don't. You don't work with them. You don't buy them. You don't put them in your house. And you definitely don't get a mirror that has been used somewhere across the ocean 300 damn years ago.
I mean, you could, but you would probably want to sage it, throw some holy water on it. You know, if you throw the holy water on it and you see smoke, probably return to cinder.
Yes.
It's probably a good idea.
I'm doing that in the antique store.
Just carrying the sage around with you.
Yep. And like just take my actual holy water bottle that I fill up at church. Because my mom bought a Ouija board when she was like 13 and I found it in my closet.
Talk about a trauma bond.
Tell you what, I went and got a holy water bottle, bought one at the church store, filled it up with the holy water dispenser at church, and it sat on top of the board game. And I am not kidding you, about a quarter of an inch evaporated within a month. I then bought little gloves that were in the church store, sprinkled them with holy water, and used the gloves to remove it to my parents' closet where it has stayed. They just don't know it's there yet. And I really hope they don't listen to this. The holy water bottle thing I have is like I can squirt it. So I'd be squirting everything in the shop. And and maybe a couple of my students.
Well, the mirror is very ornately decorated. Very pretty mirror. But it gives you kind of this icky feeling. It gives me the icks when I think about it.
Yes. There's something about, like, you know, you've seen dirty mirrors before, but this has a film on it, and it's not a film from the outside. It's on the inside, and that just freaks me out.
Do you think that this ornate mirror is too fancy for a home office?
Yes. I think it's too busy for any home under 20,000 square feet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get why they would have wanted, or which parent, what didn't the mom buy it for the dad as a present?
Because he wanted it.
Yeah, old home dude would have been told, you want that, you got to move out and take that with you.
Sorry, it's not going in my house.
No, hell no. Hell no. See, these are the type of people, when we talk about how people are dumb in horror movies and how could you let this happen, and people are like, yeah, that's white folks. These are the white folks they're talking about. I do not belong in that category. Too bad. We can't stay. I am gone. Cannot do it.
Nope. I'm getting in the running vehicle. I am not going to hide behind the wall of chainsaws.
When we talk about Brenton Thwaites, the brother, his character, he's been in juvie / psych jail, for lack of better terminology, for 11 years. 11 years, and you get busted out. You served your time, you're getting out. Would you go back to the house with this damn mirror in it? You just got out.
No. When you're in a facility like that, you go through all of this therapy, all different forms of therapy, and you almost are just taught avoidance sometimes.
Right.
If it is too traumatic, or it is a situation like this, you don't go back, because going back is going to make you mentally go back there, and it's going to set your recovery back. So I don't think you go into the house lightly. But he almost seemed kind of brainwashed, like there was nothing supernatural going on here.
Well, he had 11 years of intense therapy where they're telling him there was nothing supernatural, nothing happens to it, nothing, not a thing.
It's almost like he's convinced himself through the therapy that, sorry, dad was weird. He killed mom and I had to kill him.
Right.
And they took out every bit of emotion in the scenario.
I mean, you think that maybe because that trauma bond was so heavy, so connected, even though, you know, he's basically, I don't want to say locked up, but he was locked away for 11 years. They still have that bond.
Right.
Do you think that is probably what got him back in that house?
I think he went in because she went in. And he had to make sure she was okay. Because at the beginning of the movie, she says, you know, that she, well, not says, but she hints that she's been able to visit him before and she's been able to call him before. But for the last, I forget however long it was, she wasn't allowed to visit. And then he says, it's not that you weren't allowed, it's that I didn't want you there, or something along those lines. Basically, I can't have you feeding this crap into me anymore.
Right.
that was his way of putting it behind him where he could function in society. And I think she got shafted because she didn't get any help.
She didn't. No, they kind of treated her like, oh, well, you'll get over this.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you didn't shoot him, so you're good.
Right. You're not the murderer here.
Right. I feel like, I don't know if it's like, if the mirror, well, I don't know what the hell is up with the mirror. I don't know. Is it cursed? Is it haunted because it's cursed? Or is it just a straight up demon?
I think
The
it's probably,
soul-sucking demon.
I think it's probably all of the above. That is one of them. All of the above. Because you obviously see the apparition that's haunting the mirror. That is the one that comes forward. That is Marisol that you know, seduces the dad. It makes the mother jealous. And she's got lenses for eyes. Those are mirrors in her eyes. That's why they gleam the way they do. But takes on, it starts messing with everybody. So starts changing situations, starts making them hallucinate, starts killing plants. You know,
and,
starts making them auditory hallucinate.
And just from, you know, where she was willing to put the dog in front of the mirror, I was like, no, she got to go.
Right.
We ain't harming no innocent little puppy dog. With the mirror itself, aside from the fact that it just needed to be buried in a vat of holy water on consecrated ground and surrounded by black salt, 10 different religious type symbols to, you know, keep all those spirits in the mirror and the voices in the mirror, it was almost hard to tell who was more fixated, the father or the daughter. At the end, I could not tell who was more fixated.
Right, or who was more entranced about the mirror.
No, she was determined to kill it, but
she was determined that nobody else could do to anyone's family what it did to hers. So the brother had 11 years of juvie to, you know, get brainwashed. She had 11 years to do all this research on this mirror, to find this mirror, to figure out how she's going to try to, you know, for lack of better verbiage, kill this mirror, or, you know, basically, you know, make this mirror gone. And she knows that something can be done to it because of the gunshot that cracked the mirror. So it's not, she knows it's not invincible, that something can be done to it.
But did it,
the mirror still fucks her over.
Right. I noticed, you know, when you see that the way it gets cracked, somebody still had to suffer for that to happen. And I almost wonder, was the ending necessary the way it was? But she still didn't accomplish her goal.
She did not. I don't think that the movie would have been as good of a movie if it didn't end the way that it did, because this ends in typical Mike Flanagan style. So that's him. You think you've got it figured out and you absolutely do not.
And then shit just goes crazy.
Yep. Yep. Shit goes sour real quick, real fast.
And then nothing you think is going to happen actually happens.
So you've mentioned this a couple of times, but mom, that poor mom, she gets tamed up like an animal and fed broken glass, broken light bulbs.
Like that was the daughter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she still gets fed broken glass.
This is true. And it's on the soup plate or bowl, but you don't see the soup anymore. You just see the broken glass on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe she's already eaten the soup and was like, well, I'm still hungry. So chomp, chomp, chomp on the broken glass.
Right. And then
and for me, it was hard to watch this because I first saw the actor that plays the mom, Katie Sackhoff. I first saw her in a show on AMC called Longmire, and she's a detective on there. So part of me is like, okay, Miss Detective, but in this movie, it's like she is just so drastically different, but she becomes almost more introverted as the movie goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like she's very meek and very insecure the more time he spends in the office.
Right. And that's because Kaylee, the sister, mm-hmm. Kaylee saw the apparition through the window, but she thought it was somebody real. She tells the mom. So now the mom's got an entire complex of like, how is this woman in my house? I don't realize her coming in or going out.
And he's cheating on me.
Right.
And her character is Vic in Longmire. She'd have just kicked his ass.
They all should have kicked his ass for wanting that damn mirror, bringing it in the house. That really mirror should've. Does not belong in that house.
And did nobody notice the, where it was just one fingernail he needed the Band-Aid for, but before he kills the wife, it's like all fingers have a Band-Aid on them.
Yeah, because he's ripped the nails from the nail bed. They're all bleeding. He's chewing the fingers down.
Yes. And the scene where he gets it with a staple remover, I'm like, no, that is one of my fears, is like trying to get a staple out of a paper and stabbing myself with it. Because, well, let's just face it, I'm just clumsy like that.
Mm-hmm.
And accident prone. But I'm not ever, like, the thought of trying to remove a Band-Aid with a staple remover would have never crossed my mind. I'm like, the damn Band-Aid can just stay on then.
Right.
Eventually, in the shower, it'll come loose.
Right, that adhesive will loosen up. Do you think, as Kaylee was sitting there with these 11 years to plot and all this, of course, as time has moved forward in these 11 years, technology has moved forward. Mm-hmm. So do you think she thought about, you know, a multitude or millions of ways to destroy this mirror, and then had to go and refigure out her plan because some part of technology came out better?
Yes. And I really think that, you know, and all of the stuff that her character did to prepare, like the different timers, and then having to think backwards, like, okay, this doesn't need electricity. This doesn't need this. This doesn't need this. And the way she had everything rigged up without needing electricity was interesting. But I still don't, at this point, like, you have all of these video cameras. I feel like you're missing more equipment. Like, she said the thing about the temperatures changing. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you on all these different, you know, me and my paranormal TV shows, I'm like, okay, where's your all your different supernatural ghost hunting equipment? Yeah, it needs electricity, but it almost was like whatever was in the mirror wanted you to see it. So
right.
It was like, I almost think that, you know, it would have played with it or played on their fears more with it.
Yeah. And she goes all out of her way to, like, talk about how we've got plenty of water. We've got food that doesn't need electricity, so we don't get dehydrated. Mm-hmm. We've got this set on a 45-minute timer to switch out tapes in the camera. Mm-hmm. We've got this battery being charged, or, you know, every room in the house is set to a different thermostat where data is coming in. So, I mean, she's thought hard, long, and well about how to take down this mirror.
It's almost an unhealthy
obsession.
Yes, it is. And all of her planning comes back to bite her in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't see the plate that's broken on the floor when the fiance comes by.
Right.
And I think she was so anti-technology at first, and now, she was so, we have to have all the technology. We have to have the footage. If you look through this, you know, well, it can't mess with us this way. Oh, well, guess what, bitch? It just messed up.
It certainly did.
It learned how to play your game.
Right. But do you think that in her explaining how it couldn't mess with them that way, that this 17th century mirror figured out how to fuck with technology?
It went, oh, my burr.
Absolutely, because it does. It fucked her right over.
Yes. Well, I guess at that time it would have been mead. Yes. Hold my mead. And as you go through the movie, and I think like the last 10 minutes, it's almost like the other spirits that were taken down because of this mirror are now trapped in the mirror. And they come out. So like they see their dad, they see their mom. But then all these other crazy people that she talked about that died in these different crazy ways are also coming out of the mirror. And at that point, I'd been like, no, I'm going outside to wait until that timer goes off and the thing goes down.
Right. Yeah, but they show them walking outside several times.
And then they're not outside.
They're not outside. So it's one of those, it still would have tricked them. You know, they think, well, Kaylee thinks, Timothy is not with this shit, but Kaylee thinks from the start, she's got the jump on it, which should have told us something. The very first instance we see the mirror after what happened 11 years ago, where it has been acquired at the auction house and is about to be shipped. And she goes into the warehouse that all these antiques are in and snatches the cover off of it. And it immediately starts fucking with her. You've got these mannequins that pop up. She sees a couple move and she's over there, you know, trying to pull the sheets off of it.
And one completely disappears.
Yes. Yes. So she should have known at that point. Oh, it's already fucking with me, so.
And then she's like taunting it this whole time. And it's almost like, I really think if the younger brother had been in charge or had been able to, okay, set it in front, we're going to leave it alone and we're going to leave the house.
And just kind of let it stay there and rot and then let the timer go off.
Right. Or, you know, do something to get ourselves arrested so we know we're sure as hell not getting back in there.
Right. Or, you know, here's a thought. You don't even take the cover off because it seems like if the cover's on it, it can't see you and it can't fuck with you. So just set it up there with the cover on it and activate the kill switch.
Right. But it, I don't know, it has this innate ability to protect itself.
Right. But it doesn't seem like it's doing anything to them while it's still covered.
True.
So that leads me to a question. I think the kill switch was a bit much.
Yeah.
just a little bit. Like, you know, what part of Amazon do you order that from? Like, how do you get it?
I really don't want people to find it. Right. We really don't need people to find that out.
You know, we would probably just create something on a lever with an axe, but you got this kill switch. I'm surprised it didn't take the house down. She meant that mirror was getting just completely demolished. Now, here's the thing. If you have this kill switch, this massive, amazing kill switch, and you have noticed that this mirror isn't fucking with you while it's covered, why not on walking in the house and getting the mirror set wherever it needed to be set, immediately hitting the kill switch? Like, why wouldn't you just immediately hit it? It's not fucking with you yet. Still covered.
I wonder if she thought she had to draw it out.
She probably did. But do you think that because she pulled that cover off the mirror in the warehouse, that it already was mentally inside her?
It was pregame.
Right. And Timothy hadn't seen the mirror outside of the cover. So, like, Let's let you stay outside in the car. Let me go hit this kill switch because it ain't messed with me mentally.
Right. And I also think that had he known that mirror was in there, I don't think he'd have gone in at all in the first place.
Well, he helped tote it in.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He helped tote it in.
Yeah.
All I can say is the only reason why he got wrapped into this situation again is that trauma bond. Like, there's no logical reason for you to even want to go back or go around. You know, why would you want to go back to the place where this terrible tragedy happened, first of all?
Right.
Second of all, like, you're going to see the thing and you want me to kill it. Like, excuse me, ma'am. Are you crazy cuckoo? Because no, it's not going to happen.
Where he's trying to, almost trying to talk her out of it. That, you know, that where he says our mind creates fuzzy spots around things. Mm-hmm. And we think we're seeing things we're not. All of that is like verbatim what he's going to, or what he had been told in therapy sessions, because that is something that we really study when you look at traumatic events, whether it's somebody with PTSD or whether it's somebody who not necessarily PTSD, but has been through something traumatic and needs coping skills because for whatever reason they can't process it, but they don't have the violent flashbacks that somebody with PTSD would have. That's the stuff that basically he's being fed the script that they would use for that. And it's almost like he's trying to convince her that this didn't happen. So let's just leave the mirror and get the fuck out.
Right.
Because, you know, nobody wants to be in the house where both of their parents were killed.
No. Especially when you had to take down one of your own.
Yeah.
Like, you had to take down your own parent. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to be in that situation.
Right.
This movie, I'm going to go ahead and let you know, one of the production teams on this movie that provided funding and really helped this movie was WWE Productions.
I noticed that. I was like, what in the Triple H is going on here?
Well, they did that, and they did Your Next, which we haven't covered yet, but it'll we're coming. But they did a couple of other movies, like See No Evil, that had Kane in it, and a couple things. But this one was a shocker. Like, people didn't think WWE Productions could pull off anything, but this one, they got Mike Flanagan. So,
I'm really surprised the Undertaker didn't come out at some point.
That would have been great.
Like, right there at the end, come out of the mirror.
You know, I thought it was a good touch that you, like, the last, I'd say maybe last 30 minutes of this movie is just full throttle, adrenaline running. Like, you don't have time to truly process everything that's going on, because it's just boom, 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 boom. Everything's happening and it's all being pushed toward you. You've kind of gotten a slow burn. You know, the first hour, things are slow starting to happen. You're trying to, you know, figure out what has happened and what is going to happen. And then also, Mike Flanagan's mind fucking you that whole first hour. He is.
Yes.
You know, you're thinking, oh, they're actually doing this or they're actually doing that. And then you find out the mirror's fucking with them and none of that's happened. Like, they've gone outside and they're trying to call 911 on the cell phone, but they hear the same voice they heard when they were trying to call when they were kids. And then it shoots back and they're actually back in the house.
Yeah. And for me, that last 30 minutes, like, usually, you know, as we're watching these movies, I'm pausing it about every 10 minutes to make a note of something. That last 30 minutes, I held my phone right in front of my face and was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? Like, I could not pause it, because I knew if I paused it, I was going to stop to think about what was happening.
Right.
And it was just going to mess me up even more.
It's
nothing I thought was going to happen would still never happen.
It's like when you're talked into getting onto a roller coaster and you're like, no, I don't know if I can do this. But you're in the seat right before you've got like that half a millisecond to be like, no, I'm out. Get me out. And you're saying I'm out as it's going forward. That's what's happening with the end of this movie. It is just full throttle. And
yes.
I like the pacing on that. I think they did great that.
Yeah.
Like all of this information's actually cerebrally overloading you. And it's kind of overloading you on purpose. Mike Flanagan doesn't want you to think about the possibilities of what's happening. He wants you in that moment. Mm-hmm. And he achieves that with this movie.
Yes, he does. And it's, you mentioned in the roller coaster, it's like, let's say, Acrophobia at Six Flags.
Uh-huh.
The whole first hour is taking you to the top, taking you all the way up. I think it's 300 feet. And then the next 10 minutes is where it leans you down. So
right.
You're facing the concrete, and that last 20 minutes is you absolutely losing your mind as you go free falling towards the pavement.
That's right.
And then I feel like it just ends.
It does.
It just smacks you into the pavement, and that's it. You get no explanation. You don't know what's happening next. It just ends. And I'm like, damn it, I need a sequel or something so I know that he is going to be okay.
No sequel. I don't want a sequel. I think this one ended just fine. So, as we lead up to this ending where Timothy this whole time has been like, no, I'm not on board with any of this stuff. But he gets tricked into thinking that, something else is there in the mirror. And taunting him, I think it was his mom. Something's taunting him in the mirror, and he hits that kill switch. And the second that he hits that kill switch and it comes down, he realizes it's Kaylee.
Yeah,
standing in front of the mirror, and that kill switch just decimates her. And then we have cops showing up and everything, and it is the exact same scene as from 11 years prior. The mirror has won. It protected itself.
Just without the sister out front.
Right. Now the sister's inside the house
with nearly the parents. Nearly decapitated.
Yeah, with the parents.
Yes. And it's so frustrating because when you look at what the kill switch had on it with the two blades and the, was it 50 or 25 pound barbell?
I think it was a 50.
Like,
that shit was taking something out.
It should have, with the velocity it would have had coming down, it should have cleaned, decapitated her, and gone into the mirror. But it didn't. And part of me is like, did the mirror slow it down? Or
right.
did it put her just far enough away from the mirror to protect the mirror? And then at the end, I'm like, she fought so hard to kill this thing, and now she's trapped in it. What the hell?
Right. It was fucking you over from the beginning. And I just feel bad for the dog that they brought in, but she obviously didn't have an attachment to it because she named it dog.
Right.
Like, she knew she was sacrificing this dog. Like, how heartless. That's probably why the mirror was like, yeah, bitch, you gotta go.
Right? Poor little Frenchie.
I think one of my favorite scenes in this one was where they're talking back and forth and they're kind of arguing with each other in the room with the mirror towards the beginning, and like then all of a sudden they realize they are standing right at each other, and so they go back and look at the film and they've been arguing and moving the cameras right on each other the whole time.
Yes, and they're like, I don't even remember doing this.
Right.
And that was the first one where I was like, whoa.
Yeah, this movie is classic Mike Flanagan. It's nicely shot too. Yeah, it's 2013. So some of the technology doesn't hold up like it does today. But other than that, like this movie looks really good. for 10 years later.
It does. Compared to some of the, you know, things we've seen so far, like The Orange Blood and Dawn of the Dead and Blue Zombies. I never knew that people turn blue.
You know, if they bloated and they were underwater and stuff. Yeah, they're blue. A little blue-gray.
Yes. Or, you know, the only thing that really put any kind of date on it for me was the video cameras.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now we just have a bunch of phones up there.
Right. Or there's no tape. It's digital.
Right.
And there's a battery pack. It doesn't need electricity.
Right. Or you've got the things now that you can turn and spin, you know, to keep battery going.
Like the old hand crank radios.
Yes. Okay, so this movie had a budget of $5 million. At the box office, it made $44 million. Wow. So, yeah, it was a sleeper hit, but once word got around, it took off. And it definitely propelled Mike Flanagan's career. There is, I don't want to call it a sequel, but we're going to call it a remake, and I think that's officially what it's called. In 2015, there was a remake of this story that Mike Flanagan helped write, but it's for India. It is for Bollywood. So it is an Indian retelling of the story. And I don't remember the name of it, but it's something deathbed or something like that. But so they retold it, but Mike Flanagan has left this open and with no purpose or no want to sequel this one. I don't think it needs a sequel. I think this one's fine as a standoff. You understand at the end that Timothy's being, you know, put back in the cop cars and they're saying that, oh, you did this again on the anniversary of your parents' death, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And he's saying the exact same thing he did when he was a child. So, you know, you get locked up for good this time.
Yeah, there's no talking your way out of this.
Now, audiences gave this a 75% score. Metacritic, the critics gave it a 61. So the critics weren't all that, you know, favorable for it, but the audience was. Do you think you would watch this one again?
No.
Not even to try to figure out the little hints and pieces that Mike Flanagan gives you of trying to tell you how the story's going to go?
Nope, I saw enough.
How many times did you have to stop this movie because it was just a little too much for you?
Maybe once or twice. It did take me a while to watch it, but it's just because of my schedule right now with everything I have going on with work and, the sunset. So, and you know me, I can't watch these type of movies after dark. So it did take me a couple of days to actually watch it, but I only had to pause it to reset and watch something happy like Friends for a few minutes.
I'm proud of you that you made it through this one. Would you rather rewatch The Babadook or rewatch this one?
This one.
So this one wasn't quite as scary to you as The Babadook?
No. And I figured out when I was house sitting when I watched The Babadook and I finished it there. While I was house sitting, I realized why I couldn't sleep very well in that house. And it's because the guest bedroom, I would leave the door open for the cats. Mm-hmm. On the front of the door for the guest bedroom, there was a thing where you could hang up your coat. And there was a coat and a hat on the door. I could not sleep. And I was like, why am I not able to sleep? The bed is comfortable. I'm tired. These kids have worn me out at school. It hit me last week. I was like, Katie, there was a jacket on the door. No, had any of the arms started moving positions, I'd have been like, nope, I'm out.
Like, no, thank you.
Yep. The Babadook is not coming in.
Would you recommend this movie to anyone?
Maybe.
What are your conditions to recommend this to someone?
They really have to like movies that fuck with your mind.
Well, you don't want to tell them it's that kind of movie. You want them going into it blind, like I wanted you going into it blind.
Well, I wouldn't just ask them if they like those kind of movies. I would have to know them enough to know if they like those kind of movies or if I wanted to fuck with their mind.
The power's in your hands.
Yep. Just like when I told the lady at when I worked in North Carolina, way up in the mountains, there was this older lady there, and I had watched Wrong Turn for the first time. And I had her convinced for about 5 minutes that those movies were based on actual families that lived by where we had to drive to get to work every day. Like that kind of,
Right.
when, but it only lasted for about 5 minutes because I couldn't keep a straight face and busted out laughing. But if they were gullible enough to believe me on that, I might try and sell them on this movie.
Any final thoughts on it?
When you look at the spirits or the people that are in the movie, and they've got the reflective eyes, I call them deer eyes, or cow eyes, that are naturally reflective like that. I wonder, with all of those spirits that the mirror has taken, and those people that are residing within the mirror, do they contribute to the haunting? Are they being controlled by Marisol?
That's a good
Or,
question.
because they all just kind of stand there at the end and they're at the windows. Like they're watching what's going on outside, and it's you almost get that feeling that they want to be out there.
Right. Like they want to escape. They want out.
It's just too late.
So you're not going to rewatch this one?
No.
Oh, come on.
Nope.
It for your final thoughts?
Yes. For this
All
time.
right, for this time. All right, guys, you can find us on Instagram at Scare My BFF. You can also go to our website, scaremybff.com. We do have a buy me a coffee, and you can go there. You can do a one-time donation. You can join our membership. We have three different tiers. All of them get you access to the episodes early. We also have a tier, our largest monthly tier, that does allow you to pick three movies for us to do a year. And that scares me a little bit because not only are you challenging Katie on that one, you are challenging me. And sometimes I am a wuss. So if you really want to try to scare me, go for it. One of us will make it through the movie, whether we want to or not.
Maybe.
You can also find me at the House That Screams podcast. Both podcasts, House That Screams and this one, are available everywhere that podcasts are available. So give us a listen, share with your friends, and from us, deuces.
Peace out.